Welcome to Fresh from the Field Fridays by the Produce Industry Network, your weekly download on supply trends, category updates, brand insights, and what's hot in the market. Join us each week from the San Francisco Bay Area and Indianapolis, Indiana, as we cover all aspects of the produce supply chain. Now, here are your hosts, Dan, the produce man, and Ross, the produce boss.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Fresh from the Field Fridays. On this lovely, lovely first Friday in February, the big game weekend, it's a beautiful, beautiful day here in the San Francisco Bay Area where I am, though it is rainy and has been rainy all week, but hey, what the heck, it's still a gorgeous day. Dan, the produce man here with you, along with
Ross, the produce boss, coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, Dan. And as you said, it is big game weekend, and there is going to be a lot of food going on this weekend.
Oh, yes, there is, Ross, the produce boss. Hey, folks, today's Fresh from the Field Fridays is brought to you by the Produce Industry Network and sponsored by Buck Naked Onions and Sunrays. Snack with impact. All right, the big weekend. It's an avocado weekend.
Avocados are the number one produce item for this weekend, so it's they're going to be on the menu some fashion, whether it's guacamole or avocado slices on a sandwich or however you can do it. So,
and but I have here.
Oh, look at those.
These are California avocados. California, folks. These are not
from your tree.
Avocados. No, these are not from the tree. You know, I've been talking about these green skins. I talked about the bacon. Well, now here are the Fiorte avocados.
Okay.
And, you know, Ahucalton, you know, is avocado. You can kind of look it up and see what Ahucalton actually means and what avocado, what it's derived from. But as you can see from the way I'm holding them, it's derived from something that looks about like this. Green skin avocados.
I thought you were giving me the finger there, the way you're holding the one.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, well, it's close. In fact, folks, I'm going to put that out there to you. Look it up. See what the word avocado is derived from, Ahucalton. See what it means. And then when Ross puts up his LinkedIn, or if I get around to doing it too, because he does send me the clips, you can put it up there. Tell us what you think, if you dare. You know, your boss may not like you putting those types of things on it. But here's a hint right here. You know, that's a hint. The way I'm holding them is what it's actually named after. So anyway, California Zutano avocados. This is what I'm eating because it's what I prefer to support.
Nice.
California.
I will have an item for next week, Dan. It just arrived to me late last week. And
oh, yeah.
I'll have some for next week. A new apple. So we'll debate do that along with, I think we're going to have a nice Valentine's Day episode, you know, next Friday. So a lot going on early in February here, Super Bowl and Valentine's Day. So two big weekends.
Oh yeah. Valentine's Day on a weekend. Yes, that is very big. February is also Potato Lovers Month.
That is.
So there's a lot happening there. It's also...
Get your displays, enter the contest. You get a free gift just for entering. I don't even know what the gift is this year. I'll have to look into that.
Now, for those of you listening on Spotify or any other podcast platform, take a look. This video will get posted up on my Rumble channel, and you'll be able to see the videos, plus Ross posts a lot of clips, and I'll try and get to it as well myself over the weekend. Artichokes also start happening.
Yeah, those don't look like a typical artichoke. So,
well, these have been cooked. There's the artichoke steamer there. The two in the artichoke steamers are heirloom artichokes from Rhizomes. The other two here in the front are desert artichokes from seed. So you have the rhizome artichokes from the roots, which is the traditional artichoke, and then you have the seed artichokes. And I love the flavor on these rhizome artichokes much more than the seed artichokes, though the seed artichokes are starting to come along. So anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you because the vast cooking that I was doing over the weekend, along with everything else I had to do, we also threw some artichokes in the pot.
And as we were talking about artichokes being the number one item, approximately 250 million pounds of avocados are consumed in the weeks leading up to the Super Big Game, enough to cover a football field worth of 75 feet of guacamole.
So that's, 300 feet is a football field? And how deep are the guacamole?
Enough to cover a football field with over 75 feet of guacamole.
75 feet deep?
Yeah.
In 300 feet? I'm no mathematician, so I can't really figure out the cube.
250 million pounds of avocados. That's a lot.
Man, that's the pits, baby. Wow.
Well, and this awesome. this year avocado prices are up 11.5% compared to last year, but guacamole is going to continue to remain a popular choice. I mean, even with avocado prices being up, I was at a local retailer just recently, and their promotion on avocados is buy one, get one. It's a larger 36-40 size avocado, $2.49 for two. So it's not terrible. It's not a 99-cent, 70 count that traditionally you kind of see this time of year in promotions, but it's something different to kind of, adjust to what's going on in the market.
So a 36 or 40 count avocado, folks, that's a good size avocado. That's probably a little bit bigger than this, wouldn't you say, Ross?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit, not much.
So a buck and a quarter a piece, I mean, you can't go wrong, man. That's the way to do it. And well, we had our guy telling us, what was it, last week or the week before, telling us how to pick out an avocado. I have to say this though, Ross, real quick. There's a lot of junk going around the internet, Instagram, TikTok, whatever else they are.
If you still have TikTok on your phone, you didn't delete it, but
I've never had it on my phone, but I do have it in my computer because I put stuff up there. But there are these things going around because, they come in news feeds and they'll say, on TikTok, this and that. Folks, there is no way to ripen an avocado in 24 hours, like they're saying. Oh, put it in the oven. Oh, do this, do that. Look, if you eat an avocado before it's time, you're not going to get the flavor out of it. It's not going to have the time to produce itself into the perfect ripeness that's going to give you the flavor and the real texture that you're looking for. The only way to do it, to speed it up, is throw it in a paper bag with a banana or a kiwi or something of that nature. Put it in a warmer section of your kitchen because it is the cold time of the year. What you could do is run it under the sink, just get a little bit of water on it and then just rub some of the water off so that you might just a slight bit of moisture. That always helps with hydration. And what that does is that's a small version of what we used to do in the big warehouses where I worked, the distribution centers, in the rooms where we would ripen avocados with ethylene gas in a catalytic converter and some hydration, some moisture, any way that you could do it. I've done it in situations where we have a small catalytic converter and you just pour the ethylene right into the top of it and then you throw a bucket of water on the floor to big rooms that did it all automatically. This is a miniature version of it in your home and then your avocado will ripen naturally. There's just no way to do it overnight. Buy them ahead of time and ripen them.
Brown paper bag has been a trick for many years and it's always going to be a staple. So, never always have some of those lunch sacks available for ripening a banana, avocado, all sorts of things. There's a lot of benefit. But one last other item I wanted to kind of touch on was that celery sees a 70% lift during the football playoff and big game season as because of its pairing with dips and wings.
Oh, there you go. Well, good. Because a lot of garbage food gets out there during the big game as well. A lot of games. It's fine, if you don't
do it. Get a veggie tray. You just got to make sure if you're bringing food, bring a veggie tray. So support the fresh produce industry.
Yeah. You got your chips and you got your dips and you've got your
guacamole and salsa.
Wings, like you said, and all the other kinds of foods. Get that celery in there. Get that guacamole in there. And other fruit, jicama sticks. I mean, all kinds of cool stuff. Mix it in there. Get it in there with the other foods that you're eating. And feel better in the morning, like you said earlier.
I think that leads us into our special guest. So probably time for a quick break, and we'll have our special guest on right after these messages.
Everyone, we have an APB out on a buck naked onion. This onion is produced by Owyhee Produce, so we have to be on the lookout. Whether you're a retailer, food service distributor, or a wholesaler, This onion is whole, it's hearted, and it's buck naked, everyone. To all you civilians out there, please, let's catch this buck naked onion.
I love grapes.
Whoa, what's this?
Dude, that's a snack with impact.
Wait, what?
You know, Sunrays. They are the snack with impact. All their grapes and mandarins are certified, sustainably grown, so you know the planet and people are being taken care of. And they make a donation to save the children with every package packed so kids can thrive around the world.
No way. So every time I have Sunrays grape or mandarin, I'm making the world a better place?
Duh. That's why they call it the snack with impact.
All right, folks, Fresh from the Field Fridays, that's us, Ross and Dan, we're here. And Ross, why don't you introduce our really cool guest?
Yeah, well, we've got a special chef on here, Chef Jeffrey, and I met him earlier in 2024 at a nice little dinner that he put on as part of the Produce Industry Network and Patrick Kelly, and we had a nice little evening. Got his book here that came out in late 2024. So with further ado, Chef Jeffrey, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. I know we've had some discussion, shared some recipes over the last several weeks in anticipation of the big game episode and stuff. So, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about your culinary background and what things you've got in store for us today on our big game episode?
Yeah. So funny enough, I was about 12 years old when I realized I wanted to be in the restaurant industry. I started cooking when I was eight.
Nice.
Yeah. My mom and my dad were, you know, I was like, I want to do this. I want to make this. And my mom and dad were like, yeah, sure. No problem. And then we had a family friend that owned a restaurant and I got involved in it. I actually cooked a meal for my family that was from the Family Circle magazine. And that's how old I'm going to stay right now. Yeah. And I asked my mom, I'm like, hey, do you mind if I go ahead and make this? And after my mom picked her jaw up off the floor and she took me out to the market. I still remember the recipe too, to this day. You know, I'm 54 years old, so it's been a long time that I've been cooking. Love the industry itself because one, it's we thrive on chaos. We're wired differently as chefs. That's number one. Number two, we get to play with our food and not get yelled at. We get paid for it. That's really cool. And I think the biggest thing is that the camaraderie that we have within the line or the actual ranks of the kitchen is just phenomenal. Putting out food, giving and feeding people not only the substance they need, but actually having them get together and be at their table, whether it be at a dining table, family, or what Ross was doing when we were at the farm, having a communal table. It's one of those things that it's just, it's a lot of fun to sit there and watch. And when the plates come back and see the, you know, they're all gone and how they just, like, this food was just amazing. Because for me, food, having that taste is the only essence of a time travel we have. And you can have that bite from, oh, I remember when I was here. Or I remember when I was a kid. Like the best movie that I can articulate this is Ratatouille. When Ego eats the ratatouille for the first time and it sends him back into when his mom and he had an accident, his mom made the ratatouille and then he just started eating more and more of it. I think that's where I really got involved with why I wanted to cook.
That makes perfect sense because I remember one year I grew some potatoes in the backyard. I grow a lot of things, but one year these specific potatoes and it was the first time I ever did it. And I brought them in the house, you know, washed them all off the whole bit and I cooked them. Then when I bit into it, all of a sudden I'm transported back to when I was a little kid back in Vermont eating the potatoes from, you know, the local farms in the area. You know, my uncle had one, other people had them. It actually brought a feeling and kind of a memory back that had been completely, wasn't present in my forefront of my mind. Obviously, it was buried somewhere in the subconscious back there, but it brought it to the front. So that makes a lot of sense when you say that.
And yeah, and I think I think too, with when it comes to it, for me, I became a farmer advocate as a chef. And when I lived in West Palm, I'm from Florida. So when I lived in West Palm, I got together with Swank Farms, and they were miles from my house. And then I got to meet more of the farmers within the community of West Palm, Kai Kai Farms and Life Farms. And then I moved to Tampa, and then I realized I have farms 13 minutes from my house. The biggest thing was taking my daughter, who's now 12, taking her out to the farms and going, hey, that's where carrots come from. That's where celery comes from. That's where an avocado comes from. The difference also is once you bite into whatever that produce is that's fresh, not on a larger scale, but when you're growing it yourself or the farmer, local farmer's growing it, that passion, you can taste it. And that to me is where it really stepped in for me, you know, that flavor profile.
And I'll say that communal table meal that we had was fantastic. You know, you did a great job explaining the little bites and everything, and, you know, with the nodes and, you know, what kind of to look for as we were enjoying that fantastic meal. And it's always good. I think, you know, some people have different relationships with food. And I think that's one of the things that makes your journey so special. And, you know, what you talk about a little bit in your book is your dysfunctional relationship with food and everything. I think it's just really cool what you're doing. And I think, you know, the journey that you're on and the story that you're telling.
Yeah. Back in 2018, just to give everybody a background, the book is not your normal cookbook. And when I wrote the book and I went to my editor, she's like, I've never seen anything done like this. This has never been done. It's a hybrid book. Basically, the first part, there's one and two. The first part is basically all about my journey with mental health and my food addiction, discovering that. And then recently, within the last 2 months, it's amazing that when I was discovered that I had ADHD, all my friends were like, you didn't know that? And I was like, did you? And you didn't tell me. So who's at fault here? but realizing that you have this, here's the thing, societal, right? It doesn't matter what religion you practice, where you are as a human, you always, as a kid, you want to have dessert. So what do your parents tell you? If you don't eat all your food, you can't have dessert. Well, I want that, so I'm going to eat my food. So it didn't matter. The other thing too is look at all the comfort foods. You're sick, well, you need to eat. Like you, what do you say? You starve a fever and feed a cold. So you have a death in the family, you eat. There's all these things around our lives that are all built around food.
Yes.
So ironically, as a chef, I developed a food addiction. That was my go-to comfort food. It wasn't drugs. It wasn't alcohol, because in the restaurant industry, we're like number one for all the addictions.
Yeah.
I was an overachiever. I said, well, screw this. I'm going to go for food. And I've made a comment because I do a lot of public speaking. I made a comment one time that I would love to have been addicted to drugs or alcohol, one of the other ones. And somebody said, well, why? That's horrible. I'm like, yeah, but here's the thing. I can stop doing that. I can't stop eating. So as that's the biggest thing when you have a food addiction is how do you balance how much food you're going to eat, because you have to live to eat, right? Not eat to live. I had to change my wiring in my head, the way I looked at food, and I'm still doing it. This is not, you know, this is not done and over after I wrote the book. There's a lot of stuff. I know that Ross just saw what I posted today that I'm going through, and it's a work in progress. And I think that's the biggest thing that you have to tell people is you never stop trying to be the better version of yourself.
And I think there's a lot of Americans that actually have that same, you know, food addiction and just don't even realize it because it's become so much of a normal part of our society. I mean, I remember, you know, starting in a grocery store and you had 15 minutes to eat. And I think that's kind of where I developed my habit of eating fast because, you know, you had 15 minutes for break, you had 30 minutes for lunch, you know, and depending upon the shift, that may be it. And so you're trying to just get something down as quick as possible. And instead of taking the time to chew, savor the food and all of that. So over the last several years, I've had to work on that myself just because, like, I've always traditionally been a fast eater because of that time in my life that I spent working at retail when you had to consume food as quickly as you can to get back to the job.
Yeah, it's funny because we have a saying in the restaurant industry, eat it now, taste it later. You know, and I have this uncanny habit, and my wife gets really angry with me. She's like, can you sit down and eat? I've gotten away from eating over the garbage can.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, now I just eat over the kitchen sink. But, you know, it's one of those things, again, it's what we've been brought up and the way we've been brought up. And you put it out perfectly, Ross. It's like, we don't savor things. We learn that it's everything has to be go, go, go. And the last thing we think of is the food. The other side, the flip side of it, is big food, what they're putting into the ingredients. And one of the things I love about produce is it's whole food.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's really not much.
So fresh.
Right. To that, to manipulate it, to change it. If we're just taking it like those avocados you have. By the way, Dan, here's a little thing that you can tell your guests or everybody out there who's listening. One of the greatest things to do for unripened avocados is to take them, peel them, chop them, and pickle them. So within 24 hours, you'll actually have this bite of avocado pickled. And to put that on a taco or something, you kind of like have this explosion of acid with fat and the avocado flavor.
I never would have thought to do a pickled avocado. That's crazy.
You got to make these now. Chef Jeffrey's pickled avocados. Get them in every supermarket around the country. Man, oh man. That's amazing. Yeah. No, these are, I forgot to mention, these are organic, by the way, from Eagle Farm.
And you have absolute favorite, one of my favorites. I have two favorite vegetables. One that we'll talk about is the eggplant. But you have those artichokes. So...
Oh, baby.
One of the best things about artichokes is if you take the stem where they cut, peel that back, chop that, fold it into some panko breadcrumbs, white wine, garlic, capers, basil, or pesto. And then you take the inside, pull back the leaves, core the leaves out. Yeah, just like that. Yeah. Core those leaves out. Pull the leaves around the center that are those pithy or have the spikes on it.
Sure.
Pull the pith out, the hair, some people like to call that. Stuff the interior with that. And you can actually add shrimp to it. You can add lobster. You can add whatever protein if you want to add it, or you can just keep it vegetarian. Throw in some Parmesan cheese and then just braise it in the oven. Then you have a baked stuffed artichoke. And for the big game, there's nothing like sitting there just eating with some like a garlic aioli, dipping in the leaves and saving the stuffing for the last. Salivating.
You know, it's funny you would mention that, because in the 80s, I worked in a grocery store called Fry's Food Stores. They don't no longer exist here in the Bay Area, but they do in Arizona. In the produce department, we had these two retired guys that would come work. So, you know, I'm in my mid-20s, and these retired guys are, you know, over 60, 65, or whatever it is. And, you know, the old school attitude, and I loved working with those guys because you learn so much from them. And we had artichokes on sale. And this old guy, his name was Paul, I'll never forget it. He's cutting the stems kind of short on the artichokes. I go, Paul, why are you cutting those off, man? You know, just leave them on there. Let's you know, roll. He goes, I'm going to take them home. I said, really? And he has this big bag, a big thick, because the thicker the stem on the artichoke, the bigger the heart as well. He has these big bag of stems. He goes, I'm going to take them home. I'm going to cook them. And we call it carduna, not cardone, not cardoni, which is relative to the artichoke, which I love as well. But we call it carduna. And he told me very similar to what you just stated. So that's really cool that you would bring that up. What a trip.
Well, I'm that old. That's why. Because that's what we do in the 80s and the 90s when I worked in one of the restaurants I worked at. We actually stuffed it with shrimp. That's why I said we could do that.
Yeah, baby.
I remember having a lot of steamed artichokes growing up. And as a kid, I didn't really like the hearts that much until later in life. So, you know, my parents would actually get double the hearts because my brother and I wouldn't eat the artichoke heart. We would eat the leaves and have fun, you know, dipping that in the butter and eating the leaves. And we'd get down to the heart and we'd be done. So my parents would get two of them. So they were always ecstatic with that. So,
well, you know, because you're supposed to remove the fuzz first, Ross. That's why you don't like them.
Yeah.
And I would get to that point and I think I'd just say I was done. So it was good. But why don't we get to some of the recipes that you had sent us, Dan? Yeah. You want to start with kind of what you did from Chef Jeffrey today?
Well, let's take a look and see. So Chef Jeffrey sent these recipes out. I don't have much left, man, because my son was here over the weekend, my 18-year-old son, and then my oldest son came over last night, and so a lot of this ended up gone. But I made sure to hide some.
Tucking in the back of the refrigerator.
Well, yeah, I had to put it in a container and just said, hey, man, I need this. But it was two large eggplants, some tahini paste. I couldn't find raw tahini, so I used roasted. Some lemon juice, which I always have a quart of, or even half gallon of fresh squeezed lemon juice because I use it a lot. So I had that already, but you can use the lemons. Garlic clove smash, that's a piece of cake. There's four of those. Smoked salt, I happen to have some. Olive oil, and I didn't have a Aleppo pepper, but I have something similar. Anyway, I cut the eggplant, the whole bit, did exactly what you stated, and I'll let you go over that because you're the chef, and you can explain that to the folks better than I can. But here's the finished product. There is some parsley in there. I threw some parsley in there to kind of garnish it up. And, you know, this is the eggplant dip, man, and you just take this pita bread. It's good if you warm this up. Maybe a little bit toasted. I like to do it in a pan with a little bit of olive oil and just a sprinkle of salt and some other spices. So you get that kind of crispy end, whatever that's called, chef. But that's the eggplant dip. Now, you stated to grill the eggplant. Well, it's been raining here and I don't have a grill on my stove. So I had to roast it.
Yeah, and that recipes are, and that's what everybody kind of blows my mind. We come up with recipes. They're only just a guide. You don't have to use Aleppo. If you don't like garlic, you want to use shallots, throw those in. If you like scotch bonnets, you can do that too. Whatever you want, Thai chili. It's what you prefer. The basis is where it comes from is the Middle East. Yes. Bubble garnish is like the peak here of it. One of the things I love about it is the thing about eggplant, and let me back up. One, you have to be really careful with eggplant because it has that bitterness to it. And to extract that, there's a couple things you can do. One, you can boil it and then utilize it, making more like an eggplant caponata. Or you can salt it and then layer it in between paper and then press it. And within about 30 minutes to an hour, you actually went off and go do other prep. It extracts that the water content and also that bitterness out, which leaves this beautiful, sweet, vibrant eggplant that's left over, full flavor, not that tartness to it. And what's great about charring it with a charcoal grill, you literally can just throw it right on the charcoal with the skin on. Oh. And it starts to bubble and steam and it gets like pulls out and it just, you can scrape it right off the skin. What's left is this beautiful essence of char and smoke that adds so much complexity to the dish. And as you're eating it, you're like, I need to have more. And then the lemon comes through to break it up. And the tahini brings in this. And especially with roasted tahini, it's great too because it's roasted. It's not, you know, it's not just
nice flavor.
Yeah, you're adding a little bit more layers to it. The Aleppo pepper adds a little bit of spice layer to it. And that's more vindicative of being in that region of the Middle East. That's why I utilize Aleppo. But again, you don't have to. You can even use chipotle for
harissa.
You can even use hot chilies if you want to do that way.
That's what I used, yeah.
Yeah. And the world is your oyster. Even you don't even have to use that. You can use naan. You don't even have to use pita. You can use roti. There's so many different things that you can use. You can use celery, carrots, you know. Other vegetables.
This can be done not just as, you know, a dip to, you know, dip into the, with pita or the naan, like you said, or the other breads, but it can also be used as a condiment, nice thick condiment, on like a veggie sandwich or some sort of falafel sandwich that you make. And so this is very versatile. One question I have to ask you, though, is how much salt do you put on the eggplant slices so that you're not over-salting it, but you're still getting that release of the liquids and the bitterness?
So I'm smiling because we do this. It's just a coating.
Well, but right, but it's not
you're just basically doing a light coating, a dust of salt as you're going over it. You're not looking to cake it on like you're doing in a batch cooking like a salt cod, and you're going to put it in there to do that. All you're looking for is the salt to remove the moisture with that bitterness that comes from an eggplant itself.
And do you wipe any of that moisture off with a?
It comes you layer it in paper towels.
And that paper towel
will have a darkness to it, a tinge of brown because it's extracting that moisture contact as well. Ross had the same thing you were eating, but what we did on the farm to table dinner was we put it on a cucumber as the vessel, and we broke it apart. So we had it piped on that. So it was a one-hit wonder with lemon caviar on top, a Meyer lemon caviar. Oh,
man. And that's that so, cucumber gives it a refreshing, refreshes your palate at, in between each bite, too, I would imagine.
Yep, yep. There's different ways you can do this. I mean, you can even make the dip out of roasting a cauliflower.
Sure. I've made a hummus out of cauliflower before. Can we post these recipes up so that folks who are listening can actually see them and like you said, variate on them however they want to do it?
Yeah.
Well, the one you have, Dan, is actually in the book.
Oh, well, that's buy the book, folks.
Yeah.
Go on Amazon. Look right here. Here's the book on Amazon. You can find it.
Perfect. Look at that.
And I just found out on Thursday or Wednesday, the book got the shortlist in October of last year. So I launched it in August. In October, we made the shortlist for the Gourmet Cookbook Awards in France. And they're making the announcement. Nice. Yeah, I was completely bonkers because, you know, I was like, I wonder where that award is. I wonder if I made it. And then I see my name and four other people. So just to give people kind of what this is, 222 countries applied.
Wow.
222 countries applied. I made one of four other people for my cookbook. So I'm just
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Ross, can you put that picture back up again, please, just for a moment? Look at this picture of this guy, craveable, obsessed. Look at him. Now, look at this guy. Now look at him here behind the microphone. You know, you see that dude on there. He's bold. He's means business. And now you see this just totally fun-loving guy here. So I love it. You get the contrast.
Funny story with that. I had a friend of mine who is a farmer, actually, and she asked me, what's the cover going to look like? And the book was done. And I was really trying to, like, figure out how I can embody by just the picture what the book was about. Because when you go to the library, if you look over Ross's left shoulder, you can see in the background all those books.
Yes.
I wanted it to, like, if you look at a cookbook and when you go to Barnes & Noble and Amazon or wherever you go to get your books, they have all these guys or women behind their counter, or they're holding something up or whatever that doesn't really showcase what the book was about. What I wanted to embody was, I wanted, if you look closely at the picture, if Ross, you can put that up, if you notice my fingertips are white because I'm grabbing with all my strength, jumping over the table, because I wanted to embody that food addiction.
Yeah.
There's another picture with inside the book. It was just me. It's part one. And my hands are in. If you notice that jacket, it's not a chef coat. It is. But I had it specially made because it's a straight coat. So I kind of crisscrossed the chef coat with a straight coat. Yeah, there you go. The straight jacket.
Interesting. It doesn't button in the back, so we're lucky there.
No, I wanted it to.
Buttons on the front.
But again, I wanted to make people realize that the message to the book is, one, you're never alone. Two, if you can just talk about it as a society now we're talking about, not just the individual. I think society has dictated to us for years, we're not supposed to talk about that's taboo, but yet we can talk about flu, cancer, COVID, all this other junk, but we can't talk about one thing, and that's mental health. And if we don't have mental health, guess what? We don't have physical health.
Absolutely.
So I think the more we become open about it, the more we talk about it, people can resonate. I mean, I've had people read that book and I've gotten texts like, I didn't realize you were writing a book about me.
You know, that makes perfect sense. There's a gentleman named Curtis Akins. He used to have a show on the Food Network many, many years ago. And he was kind of chunky dude at the time. He'd have his mom come on and they'd make all these, you know, greens from the South and all these different things. Now he's kind of slimmed down, but you know what? He was illiterate for years, and he decided, man, I am going to, but he knew how to cook, man, that he knew how to do. And you could look him up, Curtis Akins. He has videos on. Okay. Well, he's a really cool dude, and he was on my radio show a few times and on the podcast. He learned the literacy. He talks about it. Like, yeah, man, I was illiterate, you know, and he is an advocate for literacy for kids and adults all over the place. So he does a lot for that. So, you know, and that, so bringing awareness to certain situations and through food, man, I mean, that's just, mm-hmm. just beautiful.
It's powerful.
People gotta chill out there and relax, man. You think you're normal? Show me normality, folks.
Yeah. Well, the question is, what is normal?
Yeah. Well, I made the one dish that you had sent over, the vegan sandwich here. So let me put up the ingredients first. So there's
one of my favorite sandwiches, by the way.
What it consisted of, and there is the sandwich assembled. Man, and here, kind of took the top off, as you can see.
Beautiful.
You know, I used a different bread, which what we had in house, and then you put the hummus down, and then you just do veggies. And this consisted of cucumbers, red onions, and I did a orange pepper that I sauteed on the stovetop. And zucchini, some flavor bomb tomatoes, and then some vegetable pesto because I didn't have time to make your charred eggplant pesto, and then a little bit of feta cheese here. So turned out really good. I mean, for a vegan sandwich, and I was really impressed to the flavors that just came out, you know, and it's the exact point. Work with what you have. So, I mean, if you have a dairy allergy, you know, don't put cheese or find a different substitute. Just put the flavors in there. And I didn't even put any salt on this. It didn't really need any salt because of the hummus, the charred peppers, and then the vegetable pesto that I got at the store. Oh man, it was incredible.
It's funny. Some microgreens on that too.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause I want to do this. Cause I do a lot of presentations.
Forget the chart.
Is, I always say that these are vegan. This is not. And in 2021, I won an award for being the best plant-based barbecue in the southeast of the United States.
Wow, that's great!
Thanks. And a lot of people are like, "How did you?" I mean, I've got a picture of a pig. I own the Bacon Cartel. And I'm known as the Rabbi of Pork. How did you get to do this? And you know, I just had this question last night. I'm up in New Hampshire. I'm going to be doing a private dinner, and I'm doing stuff with my friend up here, Keith Saracen, who's an author as well. And they asked, like, you know, how did you get involved in this? I'm like, well, listen, back 15, 16 years ago, the vegan was a bad word, right? You'd get a bean on the line, the person would walk up, server, chef, I got a vegan. And you, oh, God. Well, let's get fried rice, pasta primavera, you know, whatever. And then I worked for Broadliner, and they got into the plant-based, because obviously back in 2018, what they were saying, by the time 2025, the industry would be about $26 billion as far as plant-based. Okay. And a lot of our restaurants were going, hey, we want to get on that trend. What can we do? And I had to like learn. One of the things I learned was the more I started playing with produce and not the proteins, because it's so easy to look at proteins and go, hey, this is what we're going to do with it. And it's like full of flavor because we're a meat and potato type of society here in the States. But then you look at other countries around the world, and I'm specifically going to go to India for a second, the subcontinent. You want to talk about some phenomenal flavor profiles of vegan stuff that is just mind-blowing. And I said, well, if they can do that, what can I do? And I wanted to push the boundaries of what people looked and perceived that vegan food is. You know, that sandwich that Ross had, that was on my menu back in West Palm in my restaurant at Lake Park, in Lake Park, Florida. And the funny thing is, I was telling this story yesterday. I've made vegan food taste like an animal protein where I got into a fight with a vegan. That's probably best compliment I have ever been given in my entire life.
Yeah, no blood there, that's for sure.
Is that the title for your second book? In a fight with a vegan.
Who knows? But I made a riff, and it was 100% produce, vegetables. It was a riff on tuna niswa. So tuna, green beans, potatoes, a little bit of lettuce, olives, and then egg. Well, tofu was the egg. Mashed potatoes was the egg yolk with nutritional yeast. There's a black salt from India that has a high hydrosulfide, which is more of an eggy kind of flavor that it gives. It really smells like egg. And then the watermelon I smoked And then I use what's called farakaki, which is seaweed. There's a vegan one of it. And I dusted that with it. And the problem she had, this particular guest, was that the egg tasted too eggy and the watermelon tasted too fishy.
Well, there's always a salad option there, that's for sure. We're running up against the clock here, but Chef Jeffrey, man, I tell you, we could go on for hours here, and I'd love to have you back again in the future to talk more about it.
Real quick before you go, what is the one thing you're looking forward to enjoying on Big Game Day?
Being home. Absolutely. And not cooking, hopefully, but I doubt I'll be cooking. So, but it'll be produce. I will tell you that. I have this thing about my vegetables now.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, we appreciate you taking time for us, and we will have to have more about your recipes and everything in the future.
So, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very
much.
Thanks
for being with us.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeffrey. Wow. Fantastic, Ross. Good one. Yes. Thanks for bringing them on. That was absolutely fun. That's for sure.
I after enjoying a meal with him and being able to get his book and read through some of it and now make one of the recipes, I'm looking forward to making more. And he does talk about a lot of different options in the book. You know, if you're vegan or if you're gluten-free, there's so many different ways to make recipes and adapt to recipes nowadays. You know, we do a lot of plant-based in our family just because of different food allergies and situations. And I think he's 100% right. In today's world, there's way more options than there ever has been. And I see that as a trend that is continuing. So appreciate Absolutely. Chef Jeffrey for joining us and talking about big game and all sorts of things today.
All right, folks. And next week, we've got Ross's Valentine favorite coming on. So be sure to tune into that. And be sure to check out the Produce Industry Podcast every Monday with Patrick Kelly, as well as the Produce Industry Show on YouTube and the Produce Industry app. Download that now on your smart watch. You got one on there, Ross? There we go. On your tablet, phone, whatever you can download apps. It's a great resource. Check it out, the Produce Industry app. And be sure to check out the History of Produce series with John Papp, the Global Fresh series with Juanita Gallo. It's all right here on the Produce Industry Network. And be sure to check out my YouTube and Rumble channels called Dan the Produce Man. And all my social media can be found at DanTheProduceMan.com.
And look for me, Ross the Produce Boss, on LinkedIn and YouTube, as well as on Instagram and Facebook. So posting some different things on there and really enjoy having the community and engagement that kind of comes from LinkedIn, especially these days. So,
yeah, you know, Ross, you're an excellent writer. You really know how to project things very, very well. So check out Ross's posts, his YouTube, and the LinkedIn. Really good information.
All right, Dan. Well, stay fresh, keep growing, and let produce lead the way.
Okay, we're going to do that. And until next week, Dan the Produce Man here reminding you that it's always best when you get it fresh.
You've been listening to Fresh from the Field Fridays with Dan the Produce Man and Ross the Produce Boss. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Spotify for fresh weekly episodes. For more, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at the Produce Industry Network and at Dan the Produce Man and at Ross the Produce Boss. Until next time, we'll see you in the fields or on the horizon.